AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, collaboration, and creativity. No product can be absolutely secure. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.
Investors begin to fear that economic contagion could spread from China's property sector. Plus, a year and a half after the invasion of Ukraine, Russia's economy is losing steam.
The outlook for Russia was already pretty dismal heading into the war, but now economists think that their economy, the most it can grow, is potentially 1%.
And a prominent activist investor pulls up a seat at Outback Steakhouse. It's Friday, August 18th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin today with more economic news out of China, where signs of financial stress at one of the country's large asset managers is making investors nervous about contagion from China's property sector, possibly turning the country's problems into the world's. China markets reporter Rebecca Fung is in Hong Kong and is here to explain what exactly is going on. Rebecca, the headline that's getting the most play this morning is about property developer Evergrande, which has now filed for Chapter 15 bankruptcy in New York. We've spoken here a lot about problems at China's big developers. Is this the news that's prompting fears that property sector worries may not be limited to that sector anymore?
Partially, yes. It's basically this would recognize and give effect to the offshore restructurings of its debt, which is around $19 billion. And many of these bonds are governed by U.S. law. So the court approval of this debt restructuring basically just make the deal illegally binding in the U.S. But in recent weeks, people's focus sort of have been shifted to China's about $2.9 trillion trust industry. And one of the key players in this industry is called Zhongrong International Trust, which is part of a very complicated financial conglomerate called Zhongzhi Enterprise Group, and both are private. So this Beijing-headquartered trust company has missed payments on trust products sold to three Chinese-listed companies. And the investors worry about this industry because the Chinese trust industry had been a major funding source for Chinese developers, mainly helping them to fund their building projects.
Rebecca, in your reporting, the fear that is being stirred up among investors is that of a so-called Lehman moment, where suddenly there could be broad solvency questions about China's entire financial system, which could then reverberate around the world. How likely is that, and what should we be watching for from here on?
So after Zhongrong's missed payment, what we heard from economists and analysts is that although right now it's just one single incident, but we've seen how in the China property market, one missed payment could lead to another, and it's sort of this dominoes effect. So people are now watching with Zhongrong's missed payment, whether there will be other trust companies missing payments as well, and how that could potentially snowball into a wider trouble. But it's important to note that analysts and investors almost always fear the worst. In the case of Zhongrong International Trust, we've heard from economists and analysts that this is actually not likely to actually be a Lehman moment, because the missed payments only concern one company. And to be fair, like Zhongrong and its parent company, Zhongzhi, their problems have been there for a long time. However, it's also important to know that just because it's one company, it doesn't mean that it couldn't snowball. And especially because Zhongzhi Enterprise Group is sort of a black box because it's private. So there's very, very limited information that we can see on how big it is, how many trust products is sold to whom, and even there's limited visibility into what those trust products are ultimately invested in.
That was Wall Street Journal China markets reporter Rebecca Fung in Hong Kong. Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Lawyers for former President Donald Trump have asked a judge not to hold his federal trial on charges that he tried to overturn the 2020 election until April 2026. In requesting the delay, Trump's lawyers cite the large volumes of evidence to be examined, as well as the historic nature of the case. Special counsel Jack Smith and his team, who filed the charges against the former president, have asked for the trial to open in January, citing the public's interest for a speedy trial. Trump has denied wrongdoing and accused prosecutors of trying to undermine his bid to return to the White House. To Hawaii, where the embattled administrator of Maui's Emergency Management Agency, who was criticized for his handling of last week's deadly wildfires, has resigned for health reasons, officials say. Herman Andaya has said that he didn't activate Maui County's emergency sirens during the fires, which killed at least 111 people, out of concern that they would have sent people into the path of the blaze. Other emergency alert systems were activated at the time. Elsewhere in the Pacific, Hurricane Hilary has intensified into a Category 4 storm in the waters off of Mexico's western coast. Unusual weather patterns have put Hilary on a path toward Southern California, potentially making it one of only a handful of storms on record to affect Los Angeles. Meanwhile, wildfires in Canada have forced evacuations across the Northwest Territories as blazes risk reaching the territory's capital of Yellowknife by the weekend. It is the latest development in Canada's worst wildfire season in history, which has seen 33 million acres burned so far, nearly seven times the 10-year average. And activist investor Starboard Value has put yet another restaurant chain in its crosshairs. We're exclusively reporting that Starboard has acquired a more than 5% stake in Bloomin' Brands, the owner of Outback Steakhouse, according to people familiar with the matter. Journal reporter Ben Dummett says that makes the hedge fund one of the top five shareholders of Bloomin', which owns and operates more than 1,450 restaurants globally.
It couldn't be learned what changes Starboard might be pushing for at Bloomin' Brands, though the hedge fund often targets companies that stand to benefit from operational and financial improvements or are seen as attractive takeover targets. Supporting that view, analysts have noted recently that Bloomin' trades at a discount relative to its peers, including Darden and Burger King, which is owned by Restaurant Brands International.
While Starboard's recent investments include the likes of Salesforce, it initially made a name for itself by successfully pushing for broad changes at Olive Garden parent Darden in 2014. Coming up, in the face of Western sanctions and a costly war, Russia's economy has managed to grow. But Journal reporter Chelsea Delaney says there are now signs that it might finally be running out of steam. We've got that story after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Nearly 18 months since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the country's wartime economy was thrust into focus this week when the ruble tumbled to its lowest level since shortly after the start of the war. Russia's central bank responded with an emergency interest rate hike of 3.5 percentage points, which helped the currency to rebound. But as reporter Chelsea Delaney is here to explain, the bank's move in fact underscored a troublesome new reality for the Kremlin, that Russia's economy has reached its speed limit. Chelsea, a speed limit for the Russian economy, why is that? What has this policy intervention this week exposed at its core?
Well, the Russian economy has been a bit of an enigma this year. We saw it fall into a recession last year. It's expected to actually grow this year, and things have, on the surface, looked pretty okay for Russia. But this week really raised some doubts about that narrative that Russia is coping relatively well with Western sanctions. And what we're seeing is that the Russian economy is growing. But as one economist told me in the reporting of the story, you can have an economy that's growing that's still deeply unhealthy. And that appears to be what Russia is facing right now. So you have the government just spending tons and tons of money to produce ammunition, to produce tanks, to pay soldiers, to pay the population different subsidies to sort of offset some of the pain from this war. So you have a ton of money flowing into the economy. And that means you have a lot of demand. But at the same time, Russia has been cut off from a lot of Western supply networks. It's never, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, had a particularly strong manufacturing sector. So it just can't produce all the goods that people want to buy. So it's been having to import a lot. And that has put a lot of pressure on the ruble. So there's a lot more money going out of this economy, and that weighs on your currency. So they definitely have had to take a lot of action this week to stabilize the ruble. It's fallen a lot faster than any economist who I've spoken to this year had expected. And it really raised the specter of further economic and financial instability ahead.
To the point you make about the Russian economy, on the surface at least, looking like it's still doing okay, we spoke this week to correspondent Jared Malson in Istanbul. He's reporting on a so-called ghost fleet of merchant vessels that's been procured, at least partially, by a business in Turkey to help carry Russian oil exports to global markets via the Black Sea. I want to play a clip of what he told us about that.
What Russia has done is they're working with this whole universe of different private sector companies and actors around the world to build up this ghost fleet of ships that operate kind of in the twilight of the shipping world. And it's really, really expanded in the last year and a half. The Russians set up their own insurance system that's backed by the Russian Central Bank. It speaks to how complicated it is to try to enforce sanctions on this scale on a country like Russia that is one of the world's largest exporters of oil and just has a global economic footprint in that way, especially in the energy sector.
Chelsea, it's all very creative what Jared is describing there to keep Russian exports going. And yet this is a lot of effort being expended just to keep doing what Russia used to do, presumably more efficiently.
The story about the Russian ghost fleet, that's on the export side. On the import side, you've seen something very similar where Russia has rebuilt these supply chains going through other former Soviet satellite states. You know, they're importing a ton more from Kazakhstan, from Armenia. They're importing semiconductors from China. So there's also been a lot of inventiveness on how they get products into their economy, some of which are sanctioned. But the long-term picture is that Russia is cut off from a lot of high-tech products that it needs. Its industry has really languished. It hasn't invested in equipment and manufacturing for a long time. And they also are facing a massive labor shortage right now. You know, hundreds of thousands of people have been deployed. Many have left the country to avoid deployment. A lot of higher educated Russians have left for the West. And they're also facing a long-term demographic issue like a lot of other countries. And all of this means that they are going to face much bleaker economic prospects going forward. The outlook for Russia was already pretty dismal heading into the war. But now economists think that their economy, the most it can grow is potentially 1%. And that's really going to leave Russia in a much weaker place in the world. And people talk a lot about Russia as an increasingly backwardized economy. And that just means they're going to have very outdated technology and they're not going to keep up with the rest of the world because they are now quite isolated despite all of these efforts they've made to find ways around the Western sanctions network.
And finally, Chelsea, where does this all leave Russia when potential long-term future growth is so low and when we've got currency issues, for instance, bubbling up this week? Is there an immediate risk here for the Russian economy?
Most economists at this point would say no, this is not the beginning of a financial crisis in Russia. But obviously, the outlook is deteriorating and Russian government is going to have to keep facing this dilemma of do they keep pouring money into the war effort, potentially stoking inflation? Do they protect the population? And that's a really hard line for them to walk right now. And that question is going to get increasingly relevant as we head into presidential elections next year.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Chelsea Delaney. Chelsea, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer was Daniel Bach. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.